if we measure our lives in terms of our outside achievements, the impact we have on the world, it can often be pretty depressing. You can look back in your life, and even in the space of a lifetime, you can see that a lot of the things that you accomplished when you were a lot younger got wiped out one way or another. And the things that haven't been wiped out yet could be wiped out down the line. And of course, there comes a point when the whole world is going to get burned to a crisp, or if there's anything left at all, when the sun goes nova. When you think in those terms, it seems pretty pointless. Fortunately, the Buddha doesn't have us think in those terms. The real accomplishments of life are the things that you develop in the mind, the qualities you develop. And so even though, say, a gift that you've given has now been used up, or something you built has now fallen down, the qualities of the mind that went into giving the gift or to building that thing, the qualities that were developed as you gave that gift or built that thing, those become important habits in the mind. So as you look at your practice, this is especially convenient or especially helpful for lay people. When you look at how Dharma practice fits in your life, or what can be accomplished by Dharma practice, it's good to look in terms of these qualities of mind, so that even as you do your work, live with a family, and deal with all the issues of lay life, there's a way of connecting them to the practice. So it's not just that you're trying to be mindful as you go through the day, but you're actually developing good qualities. Qualities that will stand you in good stead, that will stay even though the impact of those qualities in the outside world can be washed away. And one of these lists of qualities is the paramis. You don't find them in the suttas, but they are late in the canon. Apparently they were developed after the Jataka tales were added to the canon. People tried to look around and see, well, what in the Jataka tales can tell us about the path that the Buddha followed? What qualities was he developing? And they came up with a list of 10. And then as they looked at the list, they realized that these qualities were not really that special for the Buddha. They were qualities that everybody has to develop as they practice, as they work their way along the path. And a convenient way of thinking about these qualities is in line with the four determinations: discernment, truth, relinquishment, and calm. The Pali term bhārami, it's one of those words that we don't really know how it's best translated. Often it's translated as perfection. In Thailand, when they talk about people having bhārami, it's like a fund of good qualities that they've inherited from their past actions. One way of interpreting the word bhārami is that it's related to bhārama, which means foremost. In other words, these should be your foremost priorities as you go through life, realizing that whatever else gets accomplished in life, you do want to have these qualities developed. Under discernment, you'd have discernment and goodwill, because goodwill is an important part of discernment. We can use our discernment for all kinds of things, but it's the wise person who realizes that discernment is best used in trying to figure out the issue of why we're suffering and how we can give rise to true happiness, a happiness that harms no one, which is why goodwill has to be universal, limitless, because we want a happiness that's totally harmless, doesn't harm anybody at all, anywhere. That becomes the motivating force for our discernment. And as an element in determination, discernment is essential for two things. One is figuring out what kind of goals really are worth pursuing, and two, figuring out how you're going to do it. Once you've set your sights on finding true happiness, the next question is, how are you going to go about it? And the Buddha sets out the path in terms of the Eightfold Path. And it's an important part of right view is realizing there are these things you have to do, these qualities you have to develop in the mind, in terms of virtue, concentration, discernment. This is the path we have to follow. And it's not a path just for some people. It's across the board, as the Buddha said. In any teaching where you find the Eightfold Path, that's where you find awakened people. In any teaching where there's no Eightfold Path taught, there's no awakened people. It's that simple. So it's what discernment teaches you. That these are the things you want to keep in mind. The quality of truthfulness brings in not only determination, and also persistence and endurance, because there are a lot of difficult things in the path. You really have to stick with it. It's not something you do for a weekend. Spend Saturday learning about your awakened nature, then Sunday thinking about integrating your awakened nature with the rest of your life, and then going back on Monday, going back to work. That's not what the path is all about. It's something that's going to require long-term commitment, which means that you have to be true to it. It means also that you have to sort out all the other desires you might have that would lead in different directions and say, okay, to what extent do I really want to find true happiness, and to what extent am I going to let myself be satisfied with something lesser? And this is a question that we can answer only for ourselves. Some people are more ready to commit fully than other people are. And as the Buddha said, you have to adjust your persistence, which means also your energy and the effort that you put into the path, in terms of your strength, what you can do, what you can manage. Look at the other commitments you have. Because the Buddha does not tell you just to throw everything away. I've seen many cases in Thailand of people suddenly say, I'm sick of this, I'm leaving home, going off to the monastery. And they never do very well, because they lack that sense of commitment, that ability to stick with something when it's difficult. And how to learning how to make it less difficult. John McPhee tells a story going out into the wilds of Alaska one time, visiting a man who was well known as a subsistence farmer. And he and the farmer and the farmer's wife were going to walk from the farmer's home back to the river. It's going to be a 2-day jaunt. So they're going to have to camp out it along the way. And John McPhee had brought on a little inflatable pillow, and he felt very embarrassed about it. He mentioned his embarrassment to the wife, and she said, look, we're not here to rough it, we're here to smooth it. We're not being rough just for the sake of roughness. There are areas where we can make it smooth, okay, we make it smooth. You do what you can to make it easy, to give yourself strength. And this is why we have the practice of concentration. It's our nourishment, it's our food on the path, the sense of ease, well-being, finding a place where the mind can be centered, feel at home. So instead of dwelling on the difficulties of the path, we find the strength so that the difficulties don't seem so difficult after all. That they are bearable, that the tasks that we find along the path are doable. Because we don't waste our energy in useless ways. We learn how to gather our energy and feed off of it as we develop the mind. Then there are the qualities that go under the heading of relinquishment. These include generosity and renunciation. Generosity is a quality of mind. It's not just the things that you give, it's the attitude with which you give them. The attitude that sees that somebody else needs something or could use something and you have it, and you don't need it quite so much, or you can do without it, and you're happy to share. Someone else is doing something good and you feel you can help. Or someone is going off the path and you have the ability to get them back on through your advice, your counsel, your support. All these things count as generosity. And they too strengthen the mind. You find that your mind is more wide open. It's a more spacious mind to live in. This is not totally concerned just with its own issues. You can look around, you see the needs of others, and you have the ability to help. That's an important part of the path. It's an important quality to develop in the mind. Other people respect you, you have more respect for yourself. As for renunciation, this deals specifically with learning how to renounce sensual pleasures. So we're looking for happiness inside the mind. Most of us would like to have the sensual pleasures and the happiness inside the mind. But there are many areas where it's not a matter of both and, it's either or. If you let yourself get carried away by sensual pleasures, you don't have the time to practice, you're concerned about maintaining those pleasures, the energy that goes into finding them and keeping them, and the attitude that gets developed. You're very possessive of these things. And as the Buddha said, one of the reasons we fear death is because of our attachment to sensual pleasures, or to our sensual desires. So it's an important thing to be able to learn how to give up, that there are better forms of happiness. The dangers of being attached to sensuality are much greater than the dangers of being attached, say, to jhana. Then you often find that the mind is not willing to really settle down and look for happiness inside unless it's cornered in a place where things are not quite so comfortable, not quite so easy, where you're going to look for your sustenance, where you're going to look for your strength. People are used to depending on things outside. It's actually a weakness. This has to be that way, that has to be this way, and the mind just gets weaker and weaker because it doesn't really have to exercise itself. But if you realize that the only opportunity you have for true happiness is looking inside, then you start exercising the qualities that are needed to develop that happiness inside. So this is why relinquishment is an important part of the path. And finally, there's calm. It's another place where you could bring in patience, but primarily equanimity. Equanimity is what keeps us going on the path. In other words, we see that it's a long path and be very easy to get worked up about it, to get frustrated, especially on days when the meditation's not going so well. Equanimity helps us to keep the long view in mind. The mind is complex. Our karmic history is complex. And our ability at any one moment to see progress in the path is going to depend not only on our present efforts, but also on influences coming in from the past, about which we can do very little. And so you accept that fact, and then you work with it. Acceptance doesn't mean, or equanimity doesn't mean, that you just sort of sit there and say, well, everything's just fine as it is. I don't have to do anything. All I have to do is learn how to accept, and that'll take care of the problem. That's not what the Buddha meant. Equanimity is an understanding of the principle of karma, that if you waste your energy on actions that are going to be fruitless, you won't have the energy you need to develop the areas where you can make a difference. So these are the qualities we want to work on. And you can look at your life, and even though you may not have all the time in the world to practice meditation, you look at the various activities as you go through the day. Which good qualities are they developing? Or are they working against the good qualities you want in the mind? This is how you can start sorting out your life. Realizing it is possible to make a living, live in a family, and develop good qualities of mind. And it's part of that's what makes it part of the practice, is not simply being mindful as you go through the day. You're trying to develop strengths of mind. Then you want to give priority to these qualities, because they're the things that will repay you most and stick with you for the longest. So it's good to stop and think every now and then, where is your life going? And you realize, well, it's going based on your decisions. It's not like there's somebody else out there who has a plan for you. You somehow have to divine the plan, figure out what it is. You have the choice of how you're going to give meaning and purpose to your life. And as the Buddha would say, it's the fool who doesn't see the necessity to develop the mind. It's the wise person who sees that necessity and acts on it. And the list of paramis of perfections or priorities is a good way of keeping yourself on that track, of reminding yourself what has to be developed. If you really want to find true happiness.